गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरावन चारी यशोदा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरावन चारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा राम राम हरे 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 कृष्णा 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 हरे रामा राम राम हरे हरे जयो राधा श्याम सुंदर राधा श्याम सुंदर राधे जयो कृष्ण बलराम कृष्ण बलराम जयो कृष्ण बलराम जयो गौरानीताय गौरानीताय जयो गौरानीताय जयो जयो प्रभुपाद 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 जयो जयो प्रभुपाद श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं मुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवते उत्तमा श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिकी। We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 24, Verse Number 33. Param Pradhanam Purusham Mahantam Kalam Kavitri Vritam Lokapalam Atmanubhutya Anugata Prapancham Swachanda Shaktim Kapilam Prapadye Param Pradhanam Purusham Mahantam Kalam Kavim Trivritam Lokapalam Atmanubhutya Anugata Prapancham Swachanda Shaktim Kapilam Prapadye Prabhus. Param Pradhanam Purusham Mahantam Kalam Kavim Trivritam Lokapalam Atmanubhutyanugata Prapancham Swachanda Shaktim Kapilam Prapadye Param Pradhanam Purusham Mahantam Kalam Kavim Trivritam Lokapalam Atmanubhutyanugata Prapancham Swachanda Shaktim Kapilam Prapadye. Mothers. Param Pradhanam Purusham Mahantam Kalam Kavim Trivritam Lokapalam Atmanubhutyanugata Prapancham Swachanda Shaktim Kapilam Prapadye. Param Pradhanam Purusham Mahantam Kalam Kavim Trivritam Lokapalam ఆత్మానుభూత్యానుగతా ప్రపంచం స్వచ్ఛంద శక్తిం కపిలం ప్రపద్యే. సినోనిమ్స్: పరం, ట్రాన్సెండెంటల్, ప్రధానం, సుప్రీం, పురుషం, పర్సన్, మహాంతం. Who is the origin of the material world? Kalam, who is time? Kavim, fully cognizant. Trivritam, three modes of material nature. Lokapalam, who is the maintainer of all the universes? Atma, in himself. Anubhutya, by internal potency. Anugata, dissolved. Prapancham, whose material manifestations. Swachanda, independently. Shaktim, who is powerful. Kapilam, to Lord Kapil. Prapadye, I surrender. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation: I surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, descended in the form of Kapila, who is independently powerful and transcendental, who is the Supreme Person and the Lord of the sum total of matter and the element of time, who is the fully cognizant maintainer of all the universes under the three modes of material nature, and who absorbs the material manifestations after their dissolution. Purport: the six opulences, wealth, strength, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation, are indicated here by Kardama Muni, who addresses Kapila Muni, his son, as Param. The word Param is used in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam in the phrase Param Satyam to refer to the Samam Bonam, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Param is explained further by the next word Pradhanam, which means the chief, the origin, the source of everything, Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not formless. He is Purusham, or the enjoyer, the original person. He is the time element and is all cognizant. He knows everything, past, present, and future, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord says, I know everything, present, past, and future, in every corner of the universe. The material world, which is moving under the spell of the three modes of nature, is also a manifestation of His energy. Parasya Shaktir Vividaiva Shruyate. Everything that we see is an interaction of His energies. Shvetashvatara Upanishad 6.8. Parasya Brahmana Shaktis Tathedam Akhilam Jagat. This is the version of the Vishnu Purana. We can understand that whatever we see is an interaction of the three modes of material nature, but actually it is an interaction of the Lord's energy. Lokapalam. He is actually the maintainer of all living entities. Nityo Nityanam. He is the chief of all living entities. He is one, but He remains many, many living entities. God maintains all other living entities, but no one can maintain God. That is His Swachhanda Shakti. He is not dependent on others. Someone may call himself independent, but he is still dependent on someone higher. The personality of Godhead, however, is absolute. There is no one higher than or equal to Him. Kapila Muni appeared as the son of Kardama Muni. But because Kapila is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kardama Muni offered respectful obeisances unto Him with full surrender. Another word in this verse is very important. Atmanubhutya Anugata Prapancham. The Lord descends either as Kapila or Ram, Narsimha or Varaha, and whatever forms He assumes in the material world are all manifestations of His personal internal energy. They are never forms of the material energy. The ordinary living entities who are manifested in this material world have bodies created by the material energy, But when Krishna or any one of his expansions or parts of the expansions descends to this material world, although he appears to have a material body, his body is not material. He always has a transcendental body. But fools and rascals who are called Murhas consider him one of them, and therefore they deride him. They refuse to accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead because they cannot understand him. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ava jananti mam muraha. Those who are rascals and fools deride me. When God descends in a form, this does not mean that he assumes his form with the help of the material energy. He manifests his spiritual form as he exists in his spiritual kingdom. Om agyanati mirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurve namaha. Mukham karoti vachalam pangum langhayate girim yat kripatam aham vande shri guru dinatarinam vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patita nam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. First of all, I would like to offer my heartfelt obeisances to His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada for giving us these purports, which are the lens through which we can look at the world today. So whatever lands in this class is Prabhupada's, whatever is muddy is mine. My gratitude to my spiritual master for constantly encouraging me to be of service to others. And gratitude to the community of ISKCON Alachua, with all the luminaries present in the assembly and everyone in the community and listening online. It is a truly humbling experience to present Srimad Bhagavatam while in presence of such exalted devotees, and yet I take this task as a service to the Guru Parampara. Okay, so how many of us have seen verses like this in the Srimad Bhagavatam? There are constant prayers of glorifying Krishna as Param or as Supreme or as Time or as Infallible. Anyone experience reading those verses in the Bhagavatam? And what comes up when you read those verses? Is it the experience that, yes, I get the prayers, but what's next? Where's the story going? Right? Is that a common experience? I have that experience also. And I was thinking that, oh, this verse, this is just a prayer, and it's something that I've heard many times. We have heard, you know, Krishna is supreme, Krishna is time. And then we go on to the next, that, okay, how is the story progressing? What is the lesson? But this time I decided that I was thinking that, where do I take this story? You know, it's this, should I focus on Kapila Muni, Kardama, the interaction that's happening? And then I thought, you know what, let me sit with this verse. Let me sit with what's happening in this verse. And the more I started to sit with this verse, the Sanskrit enthusiast in me started to feel giddy and joyful just to see how beautifully this verse is composed. So what I want to do in this class today is I want to focus on the verse specifically, just looking at how beautifully structured this verse is and how this particular prayer that Kardama Muni is offering is a prelude to what Kapila Muni is about to do in the world when he's coming. The other thing I want to do is use this as an example for the understanding the idea of the Bhagavatic worldview. So we live in this world, and we all carry a certain worldview in this world. We go out in the markets, we do our shopping, and there's always a worldview. We interact with social media, the news, that I don't know what's happening in the world. The war is escalating every single day. The economy is going down. Everything is so random. These political leaders that I voted are now betraying me. You know, I should have voted for this person, or, yeah, what's happening? AI is coming, and what does it mean? So we all carry a certain worldview. And I also want to look at this verse from the lens of what worldview is this verse offering through Kapila Muni and Kardama Muni. So let's start with a little bit of, let's start with understanding what's happening. Where does this verse fit, right? So who's speaking this verse? Who's speaking this verse? Kardama. And then who is narrating the story of Kardama? His name starts with M. Maitreya. And then who is he narrating to? To Vidura. And then who is narrating that story? Shukadev Goswami. To? to Parikshit Maharaj. Right? So we see almost three levels of conversations that are happening here. And if we zoom all the way back up, Parikshit is going through a situation. What situation is Parikshit going through? He's going to die. His death is coming up soon, right? So Parikshit is in a moment of crisis. He's in a moment of crisis and he's asking that, what should I be doing right now? Now that I know my death is in a few days, what should I be doing? Now we zoom back into Vidura and Maitreya conversation. Why is Vidura talking to Maitreya? What's the context there? Before this. So the war, Mahabharata, the war was about to begin, and Vidura was insulted in the assembly of the Kauravas. Vidura was the wise counselor. Vidura kept saying that you should not fight. You should give the rightful kingdom back to the Pandavas because they deserve it. But you have not given that kingdom back to them. So he said, let's cancel the war, do the right duty. And Maharaj, he told Dhritarashtra that you should give the kingdom to Maharaj Yudhishthir and make a peace treaty and imprison your son. To which Duryodhana gets upset, gets angry, and insults Vidura. And he insults him by saying that, who invited this this lower caste person who acts as a Brahmin, who acts as a brother, into this assembly? Who should care for his words? And he leaves. He at that point leaves that all my effort to give wise counsel to the Kauravas has fallen on deaf ears. And he leaves at that point. He leaves his bow outside the palace, and he walks away. And Dhritarashtra feels the loss that Vidura is my brother, he's my friend. And Vidura feels the pain that I have been telling you for years now, 13 years since the exile happened. Even before that, ever since Duryodhan was born, I have been telling you to give back them their kingdom, to just be a custodian of this palace, of this kingdom, not the owner. But Vidura's words have fallen on deaf ears. So Vidura is heartbroken. Vidura's worldview is completely confused at that point. He said, I don't know what to do. I'm just going to go on a pilgrimage. And when he goes on the pilgrimage, he meets Maitreya. And he asks fundamental questions. And I was wondering that Vidura is wisest of them all. You know, he is Yamaraj himself, Dharmaraj himself, by the curse of Mandukya, Rishi, sage. He appears in the form of Vidura. Why is he asking basic fundamental questions, right? Sometimes I wonder in the Bhagavatam that why are these great personalities asking? And the answer is that, or at least how I made sense of it, was that they are going through such deep personal crisis that their whole worldview gets shaken up completely. Think of it, the crisis is so strong that I don't know how to act, I don't know how to be. So I'm just trying to understand that what is the true nature of reality? Because the nature of reality I had in my mind is not making sense right now. So Vidura is asking basic fundamental questions. He's asking the question that, what is really true? Tell me. And in that, as answers to those questions, Maitreya is speaking the story of Kapila and Kardama Muni. Something similar is happening for Parikshit, right? Parikshit also, what is true now that I'm dying in 7 days? All my life, I knew that Krishna is supreme, I have been a devotee, but I still have to do my duty. Now that my death is near, now that this biggest, deepest crisis of my life is hitting me, what is true? Arjuna goes through the same situation. The personal crisis hits for Arjuna that I don't know what's true right now, whether to be killed or to kill them, to kill my guru, to kill my grandfather. I don't know what to do here. So the lesson always is, Srimad Bhagavatam's is always, if you see, almost all stories of Bhagavatam are about someone going through a personal crisis and then them getting a wise counsel. So sometimes in our life, we avoid that. I don't want to go through personal crisis. It's too hard, too much for me. Those are the real opportunities where the Bhagavatic worldview can shake us. Somebody asked Srila Prabhupada once that, Prabhupada, you have been accused of brainwashing. You've been accused of brainwashing these devotees. And Prabhupada said, that's right. Your brains are so dirty, I'm going to wash them. Yeah, that's right. So the Bhagavatic worldview is And it's repeated. The whole point of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, is constant repetition of this worldview that we can see. So the prayers are actually the washing that happens. You know, Brahma Samhita says, right? Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. We can see God when our eyes are anointed with portion of love. That means that the worldviews that we have are aside, and we put a spiritual worldview to see the situations. So these worldviews, these prayers are essentially worldview installation technology. We are being given lenses so that we can understand what's happening. So if the tendency comes to skip over that, oh, these are just prayers, we should pause and see that, what is this telling me? What is this teaching me? Okay, so, and the other reason for why Vidura asks such a fundamental question is, in the world of science, there is this concept of first principles. Understanding something from the foundation, from the ground up, as to why is something happening, what's taking place. So when the worldview breaks, we have to go back to first principles. And the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, or Shastra, they all talk about that the first principles are actually the principles established by Krishna. So we go back to what Krishna has established. So when our worldview is shaken in circumstances in our life where we don't know what's happening, even within spiritual societies and spiritual institutions, politics happen. Decisions happen that leadership makes that people don't agree with, that people make, that leadership are confounded by. There's always things like that happening in the world. So those become our opportunities to see what is really true in this world. And then we go back to the worldview that Srimad Bhagavatam and the Gita offers to us. So when the worldview breaks, which will break many times as we live in this world, as we go through our circumstances, as we go through our personal crisis. For instance, I went through a big personal crisis earlier this year. Around March, April time frame, something really shocking happened in my family in India. So shocking that it shook the core out of me. And I became very pulled back with, how do I understand this? My family was my rock. They're also practicing devotees. So I felt that this is good. They are devotees, you know. Krishna, they know how to navigate some situation. And yet, a major crisis happened in my family. And through that crisis, it shook my worldview. Even though I considered myself that, oh, I'm a devotee, I chant, I read, I understand, I'll have it easy. And through that circumstance, Krishna revealed that that despite understanding these principles, you're not living them because you're not seeing the world through that lens, that the greatest crisis will come even in the lives of devotees. We see Draupadi, we see Arjuna, we see the Pandavas, we see Vidura, we see all great devotees going through deep personal crisis. Even the humanity of Srila Prabhupada, we talk about a lot about the divinity of Srila Prabhupada, but the humanity of the crisis that Srila Prabhupada experienced in his material life, in his family life, in his work life, in his travels, in his coming to the States. Crises are meant to happen to bring us back to the first principle. So that's the perspective. So here we are going to look at the first principles understanding that Maitreya is offering through the words of Kardama Muni. And think about in your own life, if there is a crisis present, or if there is a crisis that was present, and if you sit with that crisis for a little bit, that I don't know how to navigate this, or and if Maitreya appears in front of you, Maitreya is really, let's say, presents himself in front of you, what question would you ask that will allow you to crack that worldview open? What question would you ask? Okay. So now we come to the actual story, right? So Kardama Muni is speaking this verse. Kardama has performed 10,000 years of austerity, right, by the river Saraswati. He sees God face to face. God says that, I will appear as your son. You know, marry the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu. And then Swayambhuva and the daughter Devahuti, their marriage happens. And then Supreme Lord descends as Kapil, right? Kapila Muni. And at this point, the Lord has appeared. So where this verse fits in is that Kapila Muni has appeared and Kardama Muni takes him aside. He brings him, the verse previous is that he brings him aside and he starts offering his prayers to him because he is about to leave. He is about to finish his household duties and he's about to go to his forest. So picture the scene, right? Picture this scene. A child, this is Kardama's child, And he asks the child that, hey, come here. And then the father is offering prayers to the child. Right? From an outsider lens, what would we see? We see that this is a child, you know. And sometimes we see the leelas and pastimes where the parents are also in the pastimes and they forget that this is God. But Kardama actually remembers that this actually is God descended in my own home. And I'm going to surrender to my own son. I'm going to surrender to him. And I was thinking about this point that how sometimes extraordinary can look ordinary from a distance. And how sometimes God can speak through different people. So in temples, in outside, this is just some random person on the street, but perhaps maybe Krishna is speaking through us, through them, through their actions, through their words. What are they teaching? Are we attuning ourselves? So that's what I saw, the humility of Kardama Muni here, that he falls flat on the ground to his son and he asks that, and he offers these prayers to him. He becomes essentially his own son's student, and that's the prelude to how Devahuti then also becomes a student, and he takes his lesson. Okay, so now let's look at this verse. So if you notice, Prabhu, do you mind just showing the Sanskrit of the verse? So the Sanskrit of this verse is so interesting, yeah, we can pause here, that if you see all the words, param, pradhanam, purusham, mahantam, kalam, kavim, trivritam, lokapalam, atmanubhuti anugata, prapancham, swachanda shaktim, all of those are descriptions. All of those are descriptions. Kapilam is a noun, name, and prapadya is a verb. It is such a beautifully composed verse. So all of these descriptions are adjectives, then a noun, kapilam, then a verb, prapadya. Right? So what is Kapila Muni doing? He is glorifying the qualities of God that he sees in his child, who is God. And then he labels him, he establishes the personal connection. So he's starting from divinity, right? So this is Bhakti Yoga in one verse, if you think about. He's glorifying all the qualities of God. These qualities are present in whom? Kapilam. Now he establishes a personal connection, and then what does he do? This is God's qualities. This is God. Then what do I do to God? Prapadya. I surrender. So it's a beautifully architected verse, and that's what happens in Bhagavatam. Chaitanya Bhagavat says, Krishna Tulya Bhagavata Vibhu Sarvashraya Prati Shloke Prati Akshare Nana Arthakoye. That the moment we start to pry open the Bhagavatam and start to see the verses, this beauty emerges of construction, the process of Bhakti Yoga. So I found it really fascinating that all of these are qualities. And for the rest of this class, I'm going to go through each word and what do these qualities mean, and then landing at the idea of Kapilam and then Prapadya. Okay, so the first word is, what's the first word of the verse? Param. What does param mean? The supreme, right? It comes from Sanskrit para. Para means to cross over, to cross something, right? So para literally sometimes means to go to the far side. So param, if you think of, you know, that if you see a building, right? So param in that sense would be the highest side, the far side, the supreme. If you look at a skyscraper. So it means to go to something that lies beyond. So param does not necessarily mean great. It means it's categorically on the other side. It categorically is something beyond our understanding, beyond our comprehension. Similarly, the word par, from which param comes, is used in English, right? The word permanent, perfect, par, is the same word, the P-E-R in that, which means carried through to completion, or that goes towards completion. Perimeter, something that goes around. So very similar words that we see both in English and in Sanskrit. The idea of perfect, God being perfect, literally means that this is the highest understanding. Prabhupada in the purport says that this is Satyam Param Dhimahi. He talks about the Bhagavatam verse, that I meditate upon the supreme truth. And we see Parastasmattu Bhavanyo. Arjuna says in the Gita, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavam. So this word, param, parameshwar, it's there. And so this is basically the beyond that is being handed to us, that is being given to us. That's why we use the word parampara, guru parampara. That means that the beyond is being handed one person at a time. So something that lies without outside of our reach is handed one person at a time so that it comes to me. That's why it's paramount to be part of a guru parampara process. And the philosophies and the deviations that exist that deny the parampara system are bound to fail because that beyond gets stopped at a certain point in time. So that's why Prabhupada emphasized the idea of Guru Parampara, hammered it, that that's how this gets passed. The beyond, think of it, the beyond is being passed. In Jagannath Puri, most recently, the Rath Yatra happened. Every 12 years, they redo the DTs. It's called Navakalevar. That means that they redevelop. The woodworkers actually make new forms of Jagannath, and then they put the old Jagannath under the earth in a place called Koili Vaikuntha in the temple. So it's a huge process. There's a whole process of discovering the wood, where the trees are. They have this little marker on the ground that points in the direction they have to go through. It's a very mystical process that the Daitapatis go. Then the tree that they have to discover has to have the four symbols of Shankh, Chakra, Gada, Padma on a tree. There has to be a snake that's next to a tree. A particular owl should be on the opposite tree. So there are all these markers through which they discover that this is the tree for Jagannath. Similar process for tree for Baladev. Similar process for Subhadra and similar for Sudarshan. So there's this whole process that happens. And then they make the new Jagannath deities. They put the old deity. But through that process, there is one process that happens where the whole city of Puri is locked down in the night. All the lights are closed whenever Navakalevar happens. And for that time, there's no electricity in the vicinity of the temple. And in complete darkness, the Daitapati covers his eyes with a blindfold, goes to the old deities. The deities are hollow. Opens the deities, takes out something from the old deity, puts inside, closes it, opens his eyes. That is called as Daru Brahma in the Odia tradition. That means they say that there is a spiritual element here. Nobody knows what that is. That is transferred from one deity to other deity, and that completes the process. Why did I bring this up? The process of giving that absolute goes from one deity to the other deity to the other deity. The same process, the Guru Parampara is the process of giving us, and that's why the idea of Param. And that naturally brings us to the point of Sammam Bonam, that Krishna is the supreme through which this tradition continues and comes to us. So we are getting it from that perspective, from that point in time, that the absolute is descending and is being given one step at a time, one person at a time, that it comes, just like it happens in the Jagannath temple. Now, Prabhupada, very interestingly, also calls it as somebody who owns six Aishwaryas. In the purport, he talks about it, right? He starts the purport with that verse, that Param means that somebody who has all these six opulences. So I always appreciate Prabhupada's understanding and how he presents different concepts and brings out the idea that we should also think of Supreme as somebody who has all the opulences of the world. You know, we go after certain opulences, but here's one person who has it all, who has it all. So we think and we surrender to that. So the key point being the word Param, when Kapila is looking at his son Kardama is looking at his son Kapila, he's saying that you are Param. You have come from that far shore. You are the supreme. You carry all the opulences. And now you're present here in front of me. So that's the quality in you that I'm glorifying. And in the world that we live in, how our worldview shifts with the idea of Param is that we see opulences present in the lives of people, in the people we see. But the actual understanding being that all of these opulences come from the Supreme. So when we get glorified by a certain trillionaire whose company just IPO'd a few weeks ago, and we get, wow, this person is going to take us on Mars. This is so glorifying, so amazing, versus recognizing that, nope, the actual Param is actually always Krishna. And that's another worldview, that's a worldview for us to clear up, so that we don't get impacted by false role models who may have some more opulence than us, and then we think that, oh, this is a great person. No, it's Param, it's Krishna. To go back to that. The second word in the verse is Pradhanam, right? Pradhan. What does Pradhan mean? Material substance, yes. It also means something that is placed in front. Pradhan. So Kapila appears to give the Sankhya philosophy, right? We know that Kapila Muni comes. And one of the ways Sankhya philosophy is distributed is the idea that everything comes from a substance called Pradhan. So there is a very specific reason why Kardama uses this particular word to denote him. Because he's preluding that you, Kapila, you have appeared and you're going to give Sankhya philosophy. So I'm going to use that same word. Because later on, another atheistic Kapila comes. And he gives the atheistic philosophy of Sankhya. And he says, there's no God. Pradhan is supreme. That's why Kardama Muni is saying that you, Kapila, you are Pradhan. You are Pradhan. That means that you are supreme as a person. So Pradhan means that which is placed in front. Pra means forward and Dha means to put. It's also the word Dhatu in Sanskrit. In English, this Dha word becomes thesis or theme, that same word to place something. So Pradhan means the first placed. So Prabhupada, in the purport, says Sarva Karana Karanam, that God is cause of all causes. So he's establishing, because the atheist worldview is that the cause of everything is matter, right? It's Pradhan. The atheistic Kapila, when he appears, he says that the world comes from matter. A lot of modern-day scientists also believe that, right? They call it the primordial soup theory, which means that all of the elements existed in the soup that was bubbling. And as this soup started to bubble, something started to condense and a life form appeared out of it. And then that's what gave birth to matter. And atheistic Kapila, who also appears later on, which a lot of traditions in India believe in, and a lot of Vedanta is expressed in that understanding, that ultimately it goes back to matter and Brahman. So here, Kardama is establishing very clearly that you are Pradhan. You even come before all of that. You are the supreme. You are Swarat, Abhigya, Swarat, Sarva Karana Karanam. So it means he's saying that a person is placed before matter, which is where modern science stops, right? If you think of modern science, the understanding it, everything comes from matter. But Kardama Muni is saying that there's a person before it, and that's why he uses this specific word, Pradhan. So for our lives, for my life, I was thinking that if I think that life is just a random series of occurrences and I don't know why things happen and why is this happening, if I start to think that there is a person that comes before it, what would change for me? What would change for me if I think that maybe the moments that I see ordinary in life, that this is so random, why is this happening in my life? Perhaps if there is a person beyond it, that means that there is a reason. A person means that there is always an understanding, a reason, somebody making a decision, somebody giving us our experiences and life lessons, that it is moving under Krishna's will, it is moving under the will of this Pradhan, who is a person at the end of the day. So the cause of all causes is conscious. And that's why the third word that he uses in this verse is Purusham. So he's saying you're Param, you're beyond, you're Pradhan, you come before, and who are you? You are a Purusha. What does Purusha mean? Person, ultimately. Purusha means person. That's why the Rig Veda talks about Purusha Sukta, or Krishna says in the 15th chapter, right? Loke Vedecha Pratita Purushottamaha. I am celebrated as the Supreme Person. So again, coming back to the understanding of this world, we talk about the universe is so benevolent. Oh, the universe is guiding me. People try to conceptualize the universe as a person that is interacting with me, but I have a hard time accepting that beyond the universe is a person at the end of the day. We want to personalize the impersonal so that it makes me feel better, because some days I can feel better about it, that the universe is helping me, and some days when it doesn't, things don't go my way, then there's no person, you know? Yeah. So it makes it's my convenience that I make God as a person or universe as a person and I don't. The Bhagavatam is very clear about it, that even if there are lessons in your life that you don't want to learn, things that you don't want to see, people that you don't want to be around, experience that you don't want to experience, if all of these are happening, because there's a person behind it who's trying to tell you something, who's trying to teach you something. What am I unwilling to learn? That's what it means that there's a person behind it. That's why he says that you are Purusham, that you are a person. That's why people have a hard time accepting that if I went through my childhood traumas, if I went through so much suffering in my life, if I'm going through so much struggle, then it's easy to think that, or it's easy to spiritually bypass it, that, yeah, whatever karma happens. The hard part is to sit through it and see that, but what is my lesson through it? Because spiritual bypass runs the danger of conveniently avoiding the lesson. Conveniently avoiding the lesson that needs to come from that experience. It means that we sit through our pain and we understand that what is my pain telling me and what is Krishna telling me through that. The moment I start to bypass it, I also forget the lesson, and then it has to repeat again. And then I wonder, why is this happening to me and again and again? And so the point being, to see that there is a person behind it, there is a person who is guiding. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita also, Brahmano hi pratishtaham, that I am the source. A common argument that atheists use is that why contain God? If God is unlimited, why limit him to a person? It's like saying that if sunshine is unlimited, why limit it to the sun? Well, because the sun is the source of it. So similarly, God is the source of it all. So personhood matters. Personhood is the most important principle in our tradition, and that's what separates us. That's why Srila Prabhupada came to clear out these nirvisheshvadis and shunyavadis. It's in Pranam Mantra of Srila Prabhupada. It's one of the main things that Srila Prabhupada came to deliver to this Western world and to the broader world in general, is personalism, this idea of personalism, because bhakti is predicated on the idea of personalism. Once personalism is established, then the process can be established to that person. So how, the question for us, for me, for all of us to reflect is that how am I still attached to the idea of impersonalism in my practice of bhakti? Where is impersonalism still creeping up in my life, where I deny God's personhood and I make God as a principle or God as a rule or God as a being, but not really that personal connection? That's why Krishna also appears as deities in front of us, to remind us of the idea of personalism, that God is a person. And where am I denying God's personhood? And where am I denying my own personhood through that? Because the impersonalists want to merge. What it means is that I deny my own personhood. To accept that I also have feelings, thoughts, emotions, choices, and I will always have them. Whether I'm in the material world or I'm in the spiritual world, I will always have my free will, my thoughts, my desires, my emotions. Then how can I deny it right now? That, forget about it, conveniently. Forget about it. It means to bring it out. That's why Rupa Goswami and our Goswamis give all the philosophy, all the tattva, and then after tattva, what do they give? Rasa. Rasa Shastra, the Shastra of emotions, the Shastra of understanding, the Shastra of seeing God's emotions and then our emotions and what comes up for me. The whole process has to get to that point. That means I start to take my personhood, my personhood seriously, and seeing God's personhood, and then coming to that point of connection. And that's what Krishna wants, Bhavagrahi Janardana. It's called Bhavagrahi Janardana. And what is he asking for? He's asking for Bhava. What is Bhava? Bhava is my emotion, my unique expression of my emotion and my devotion to Krishna. How do I get to Bhava? By understanding first what is not Bhava. I see my material emotions that are coming in between. I process, I heal, I understand, and then I start to get into the spiritual emotions. That means following the process of bhakti, but also understanding that there is a person at the end of it. So Vidura received that, Parikshit received that, ultimate conclusion is all that there is a person at the end of it. So that's why he's saying that this is a person. I'm going to quickly speed up here. And then he calls him Mahantam. Mahantam means, Mah means great. It's the same word in English as magnify, that something is glorified, magnified, Mahantam. Mega, in Greek, megas means mega, maha. It's the same root, magna carta, megaphone, maha mantra. So he's calling him that you are Mahantam. And this is another prelude to what Kapila Muni is about to do. So he calls him Pradhan. And then there is Mahat Tattva that comes from Pradhan, which is the material energy. So he's again using that word as a prelude to what Kapila is about to do. And the idea of the first principle, right? That we talked about, that first principle. So Mahat Tattva, Pradhan, these are also first principles of which how this ego, mind, and the world is developed. So what he's saying is that you're supreme. And even what you create, even the clay, essentially, you know, it's like a Play-Doh. It's Krishna's Play-Doh is this Mahat Tattva through which this material world is created. That this also comes from you. It's actually your energy. You created, you injected. Otherwise, this has no power. That's why you're Mahantam. And then he calls in the next line that you are Kalam. You're also time. You're also time. Kal can also mean sometimes death. That you're also death, you're also time. And that's another way of understanding. It's very impersonal to see that time, yeah, time comes that way. That's why Krishna establishes in the Bhagavad Gita that time I am. I am time. So the point here being that when Kardama is telling him that you, Kapila Muni, that you are time, and this time plays a role in Arjuna's life, in Parikshit's life specifically, And the materialist worldview, if we have a materialistic worldview, then time for me means that everything will be taken away from me, right? That's what time represents to people. That's why they're so afraid of aging. That's why there's a billionaire out there who's working on de-aging himself. He's spending all kinds of money. You can look him up. I'm not going to name him. But he's working on de-aging because he feels that time is going to take everything away from me. And that's how Parikshit was feeling, that time is here, coming. But what, by Krishna being time, what is being revealed to us is that time actually does not take things away from me. It dismantles what is temporary, so the eternal remains. Because at the end of our time, all temporary things fall, but the eternal, which is us, which is our nature, spiritual nature, us as a jiva, us as atma, remains at the end of the day. So what is my relationship with time? What is my relationship with aging? What is my relationship with deadlines? What is my relationship with seeing that, oh, these children are growing too fast? What is my relationship with seeing that my parents are old or they've passed away? What is Krishna taking away from me through time? When Kardama is calling Kapila as time, he's referencing this point that you actually take away what is unnecessary and what's necessary ultimately remains. For a materialist, time is everything. It's going to end away my life. For a spiritualist, it brings out the essence. Then he calls him Kavim. Kavim means he's a seer, somebody who's able to see. Kavim also means a poet. And a poet is a person who sees the world and then writes about it. So he's calling Krishna as the original seer, that you originally see, and that's why Bhagavad Gita is a poetry by Krishna. It's poetry. Why? Because Krishna sees it all, and then Krishna gives Arjuna the distilled version of the Vedic philosophy. That's why even in the Bhagavatam 1.1.1, Tene Brahma Ridhaya Adi Kavaye, that means that it's translated to, through the heart, you know, through the heart by this Adi Kavi, by the seer, by the original Kavi, you know, that the one who is even imparting information to Brahma. That's what it means. So Kavi means that one who sees everything and then documents about it and shares it out with the world. That's what he's calling Krishna as that. He's calling Kapila as that ultimate awareness, that the supreme awareness who's seeing everything. Prabhupada writes in the purport that he's able to see everything, even in the remotest corner of the world. Even in my heart, if I come to the temple and if I have something that nobody else is able to see, and I think that I can get away with this, he's able to see. He's able to see right through it. So what are we hiding? What are we protecting? That's why he's called as that person. So if you think that there are some private moments in my life that nobody's seeing in my heart, well, guess what? That worldview is also broken. Krishna is seeing. So what Kapila is doing is breaking our worldviews. Then he calls him Trivritam, right? He Trivritam. So Tri means three. Vritam means to envelop, to cover around. Vritam, Vritti, like Chitta Vritti. So it's like three ropes that are enveloped together. So if you imagine three wires that we enmesh together and becomes a rope, that's what is the modes of nature actually, that these are the principal energies of this world that comes. So he's again giving another example that the modes of nature in Sanskrit are also called as guna or rope. So the point being that these are tightening and binding us in this world. So he's saying that you are also Trivritam. That means that you see everything and your energies actually covers everything. So even the very action, the very things in my life that I think that I'm controlling are actually being controlled by the modes of nature. So I'm truly surrendered to you, because even the things that I think I have created is I've built this house. It took me 4 or 5 years to build this beautiful house here. I bought this land. Not even that. So he's breaking another worldview of ours, that I do things in the world. He's saying, not Trivritam, you do it through the modes of nature. Then he calls Kapila as Lokapalam. That means that you are the governor, shepherd of all the worlds. Loka means the world, to see, to behold, and Pala means to protect, to nourish. So when I think in my life that I am the giver of my family or of this community, or you know, this organization cannot function without me or without this person, he's breaking that worldview also by telling us that it's actually governed by Krishna, protected by Krishna. So again, that idea of every single worldview that we develop in this world is being broken one step at a time by this verse. That's why Krishna is called Gopala, somebody who takes care of the cows and our senses when purified. So he's the maintainer of it. Prabhupada says that Krishna is maintainer of everything, and there's no maintainer for Krishna because he's the supreme. And that understanding that, yes, I am maintained by Krishna in all my actions and in all my life, but he does not have a maintainer. So I surrender to him. That's why I surrender to him, that he's the real Lokapala. the shepherd of the world. That's why the Jesus imagery also sometimes is that he's the shepherd of the lost tribes of Israel, the idea being that he takes care. And then he says, Atmanu Bhutya Anugata Prapancham. I'm not going to go deep into the Sanskrit of it, but what it really means is that Atma, self, Anubhutya, internal potency, dissolves in Prapancha, material manifestation. That means that when he breathes out, the material world comes. When he breathes in, the material world gets dissolved. Again, because he's giving a prelude to Kapila, he's saying that by his breathing. So if you think of our lives are within just one breath of Brahma, one breath of Mahavishnu, sorry, not Brahma. In one breath, he exhales, the universes get created, we do our life, we go to our kindergarten, we go to our school, we buy our car, we get married, we die, we take another birth, all of that happens, and then he breathes again, and then he breathes out. That's it. That's what's happening. So if we think that my problems are so big that nobody can solve this, it's just a sigh from God. That's it. That's all it is. So he's seeing that you, O Supreme, from whose breathing all of these things happen, you have appeared as the sun right in front of me. That's how powerful you are. And how does it happen? What's the next word? Swachanda Shakti. By your own potency, by your own energy, by your own will. This all happens by your own will. Again, a personhood of God. The self-made billionaire can think that I made my own billions. I became the head of state because people voted for me. Well, where do these people come from? Where does the money come from? Where do the resources come from? Swachanda Shakti. That's why Prabhupada is like a razor in the purport. He says that someone may call himself independent, but he's always dependent on someone higher. Prabhupada hammered that point time after time because he's giving us this worldview that the ultimate independence is that I'm dependent. That's the ultimate independence. The ultimate independence is not that I'm self-made, but I'm dependent. That's the idea of Swachanda Shakti. So this bhakti script switches. So after giving all these qualities, right? Param, you're beyond. Pradhanam, from you everything comes and you are as a person beyond it. Purusham, you are a person. Mahantam, this material world manifestation, everything comes from you. You are big, massive. Kalam, you're also the element of time. Kavim, you see everything. Trivritam, the material world is bounded by your energies. Lokapalam, you maintain everything. Atmanu Bhutya Anugata Prapancham, that these things are dissolved and coming out of your breath. Swachanda Shakti, by your own will. And now what does he say? Kapila. Now he says that who you are? You are Kapila. Kapil in Sanskrit means reddish brown, basically. It's literally a color. You know, in the Shastra says sometimes God appears in red form. This is the form that they're talking about. So then he personalizes it all. So the description of God as attributes, as qualities, and then he gives them a name. That you have come as Kapila. And that's the principal aspect of bhakti. What are we chanting? What are we chanting every day in Mahamantra? What are they? Names. They are ultimately names because name belongs to a person. We are not chanting Mahatattva, Mahatattva, Brahman, Brahman, Brahman. No, we are chanting a name at the end of the day. A name is the most personal thing that anyone can have. How do you identify something as a person? How do you personalize something? You give it a name. You give it a name. That's the whole process of bhakti. It's so simple in one sense that we are just chanting God's name. That's it. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Krishna. That's it. That's all there is in front of us. So he then calls it throughout all those qualities. All of those qualities are present in this one person and your name is Kapila right now. And what do I do when I see, when I establish a name, think of these qualities, they're still on an intellectual level, right? The qualities are on an intellectual level, logical level. When you name it, what does it become? Feelings. We suddenly enter the realm of feelings. That Kapil, oh, Kapil, that's your name. And suddenly I'm establishing a connection. So that's the point of Bhagavatam also, that we can live in the realm of philosophy. It has to come to the point of personalism. That, oh, that's your name. Oh, Krishna, this beautiful black boy that I connect with. Krishna. Oh, his consort is Radha. There's a name there. So I have to come to the point of the name. We have to come to the point of name and involved with feelings. So think of it, what's happening. We understand the philosophy, through our understanding, through our practice, through bhakti, through reading. And then we come to the point of the name. And Prabhupada is so kind that he has given us name also upfront, very early. The movement is Hare Krishna movement. He's giving it to us very freely. But we also have to come through our own process of bhakti. That, oh, name is supreme. I come to the point of name. The point of self-realization is name at the end of the day. And then what does he do? What does he do? When he sees the name, what does he do? Prapadye. I surrender to that. I surrender. So we establish the qualities of the world, qualities of God, qualities of the divine. Then we give it a name and then we surrender to that. That's the process of bhakti, isn't it? Isn't this a beautiful verse? In one verse of Bhagavatam, just see the amount of philosophy that is expressed here. Prabhupada makes one point. He calls out the point of mudha, right? The mudha. And mudha is someone who sees God but does not consider it as God. Because he's like, oh, that's not God. They deride Krishna. Whereas Kardama sees it in his own child. So somebody think of it. When Kardama is offering this prayer to Kapila, outside a window, there is a person. There's a person who understands bhakti and a person who does not. The person who understands bhakti would be filled with heart and emotions that, oh my goodness, such a powerful scene here. God has appeared as a child and the sage Kardama is surrendering to him. A mudha, an unintelligent person would think that, what's happening? Why is the father, who is such an elegant sage, surrendering to a four-year-old? To a five-year-old. That's what it means to be a mudha. Because the eyes have not seen, the understanding has not established. That's why logic and philosophy is important, to give us that understanding. And then when we come to the point of name, then the heart opens up fully and emotions are expressed in that way. That, oh, Kapila, my heart is full. It's a name for you. And I surrender. And what do I do? Prapadya. Pada means feet or to fall, right? Prabhupada, at whose feet the master sit. Right? Pada, pedal in English, pedestal, all same words, same root. English is filled with Sanskrit words. So I surrender unto you. I take that shelter. So who is he surrendering to? Is he surrendering to a principle? Is he surrendering to all these qualities? No, he's surrendering to the person. And that's the ultimate point of the surrender. To surrender means to establish first Godhead's supremacy, his godhood, which is what Kapila Kardama is doing by establishing the godhood. Then he's establishing the personhood, and then he's surrendering to that personhood. And through that process, he's also revealing that what surrenders is also a person. So Kardama is a person, Kapila is a person, and that's where the process of surrender happens to that. So this is the Bhagavata culture. When we see of our worldviews, we have to break our worldviews. The Bhagavatam, verse after verse, Prabhupada's lecture after lecture, book after book, writing after writing, is to pry open our worldview, to see the worldview that we live in versus the worldview that Srimad Bhagavatam provides. So every word is giving us something. Are we receiving that gift? And are we allowing it to transform? Not just I hear the class and then I go back to my usual self, but am I allowing it to open up my worldview and see that these are the underlying axiomatic truths, the first principles that Vidura was seeking, that Parikshit was seeking, that Arjuna was seeking, that all the people in the Shastra who have gone through crisis, Gajendra, Dhruva, Prahlad, every single person has gone through a crisis. They are seeking the ultimate first principle truth, which is the principles of bhakti, principles of personhood and godhood, and I surrender to that. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. If there are any questions, reflections, yes. I think Mother Ragatmika has, Pran Govinda Prabhu has. Yeah.
Thank you so much. I think this was about a 2-hour class, but the speed of your putting it out was, you got it in. You mentioned this ceremony wherein Lord Jagannath, the essence is transferred to the new form. Now, this didn't take place when Srila Prabhupada created our first Jagannath in the ISKCON movement. Is it the Prabhupada element that makes it now bona fide, that's all? I mean, you know, without that ritual. Because many have been made throughout the world.
Well, Prabhupada has 100%, I would say, Prabhupada's potency to bring deities, to bring Krishna in his forms, to to name a deity as Radha Landanishwar, right? To which is so unique in terms of it never happened. So Prabhupada was unprecedented in who he was, in what he did, and what he gave us. Obviously, such an empowered person. So, and the point of the Puri tradition is that it's a tradition, right? A lot of Vrindavan temples have their traditions and their practices that they go back to. There is this whole practice of Rasa Leela that happens in Vrindavan, where Brahmin boys, and then there's a whole stories of, you know, how a particular Radharani's anklet fell, and then they used, there's so many understandings in these cultures. In South, there is a tradition that Akshayapatra is still preserved with where Madhavacharya is worshipped. So the point being that they all have their reasons for this. For our understanding, all Jagannath, perfect and complete, because Srila Prabhupada offered it that when he gave us the right principles. So, yeah. Her question was that if in Jagannath Puri, they transfer the Daru Brahma from one deity to the other deity of Jagannath. We don't do it in our deity. So our deity is still, you know, but Prabhupada gave it to us. And he gave us the understanding to understand that. So, yeah.
Thank you for elaborating this Paramam Purusham Pradhanam Mahantam. I already memorizing this because I always thought majestic aspect of Bhagavan evoke submission. Is there a particular verse? I think I'm going to meditate on this verse. This is probably more than I ever thought. This verse has really majestic aspect. And don't try to convince Nanda Maharaj. He will never buy it.
Yeah.
He will never buy it. It's literally because Nanda Baba, he faces this every day. That Brahmana and other try to convince that not to, in one lecture, Prabhupada said, Nanda Maharaj so much in love with his son that he will not even allow him to be a demigod. What to talk about Supreme God? But this verse is so much emphasizing the majestic aspect of Bhagavan. Mm-hmm. It's so wonderful. Mm-hmm. I'm going to really meditate on it a lot. Because without submission, affection should not be promoted. Mm-hmm. Because sahajiyasam will intervene.
Yes.
So this verse is very wonderful.
Yes.
I can see why Bhagavatam went like this, ninth canto, all the way, like submission. It's very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Because sweet aspect, we are interested. Sweet aspect evokes affection. Mm-hmm. And we need that. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur says anartha nibriti, also artha
prabriti.
Both has to be side by side. Mm-hmm. But this verse is a perfect emblem. I think after you explain, it filtered in me that yes, this verse is the greatness of God.
Mm.
Now I can see why Kardamuni walked out. Because it would be difficult to hug him as a father to son. He's God.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, Rupa Goswami Pad put Kapil Dev as a Santa Ras predominating deity or object of Santa Ras. So Kapil Dev has a very unique quality. In Loku Bhagavatam, it also explains about Kapil Dev's. And also other concept you have. Anyway, many things, I don't take much time. But another aspect you also mentioned about the pseudo Kapila or atheist Kapila.
Yeah.
And that was a very similar. I found many interesting poems. We can discuss later.
Thank you for sharing, Prabhu. Thank you.
Thank you, Prabhu. Coming back to the earth here. one point that you were talking about how Krishna knows past, present, and future. So that's always bewildered me. I was thinking, well, wait a minute. We have free will, and so how is it that if something's already determined, you know, how do we deal with that? And then I don't know whether this is correct or not, but I thought, well, if I connect my day with Krishna, you know, okay. If I can listen within, saying, well, Krishna, what do you want me to do today? You know, and then, of course, he knows everything, so he can kind of like give me a hint. Oh, we'll do this, and you'll, but really, so many people aren't really listening, and but how do we understand Krishna knowing past, present, and future? I know I understood the past, and the present, but the future?
Thank you for your question. Yeah, it's bewildering, right, that question of how does it happen. I go back to the understanding from the Mahabharata where practically it plays out that what Krishna knows is the outcome. What's the outcome? Is that these demoniac kings will be killed. That's the outcome, right? That is known. That is known that this is going to happen. So that's the future, that yes, that's going to happen. But what Krishna, if you see, even in the Mahabharata war, Krishna gets angry at certain moments. He goes to Dhritarashtra, he becomes the peacekeeper, and he says that there are two faults here in this assembly, two faults. One is that the prince is mistaken and the prince is going against the dharmic principles, but that can be corrected by the king who can assert his power. And he goes with the idea that there are other ways where these demoniac kings will be killed. It's going to happen. We can save what the Kurus have created. But when Krishna, when nobody listens, Duryodhan tries to bind him, right? Duryodhan tries to capture Krishna, sends all his brothers, and he expands. And then he leaves. Duryodhan leaves, and Krishna decides to leave that, I'm going. At that point, Dhritarashtra comes and says that, look, I am powerless. You see my son. My son is a rascal. I can't do anything to protect. I can't do. I've tried my best. What do I do? And Krishna gets angry at that point in Mahabharata. And he said that, everyone, just look at this situation. There is a prince who is on the bad path, and there is a king who does not want to take responsibility. If Dhritarashtra said in that moment that, Duryodhan, you are arrested, you are in jail, other ways the future would have panned out. But because Dhritarashtra did not make his choice, what ends up happening is that this calamity that descends on them. So the point being that we have free will within a framework. The outcome of the framework has been decided, but within the framework we can choose. Within that framework we can choose of how we engage. Do we engage with Krishna or do we not engage with Krishna? Does that help? Thank you. Here comes the BI scientific perspective. All right.
Well, a thought just came to me as you guys were discussing. You say Krishna knows the future, but then everything's dynamic, and if he so chooses, he could change that future. I mean, it's all plastic to him. You know, it's not like, oh, I know the future, now I can't do anything about it. So the relationship is also dynamic. So, I mean, obviously when we say we have free will, it doesn't mean that we're Vishnu Tattva, and now we control the material energy.
Right.
But, you know, it's like a child has... You know, we give facility to a child and they can express themselves without interference. So
yes.
That could be part of it.
Thank you for sharing. The other perspective, Prabhu, you have a question? Yeah.
What I understand, you know, I always ask myself a question. Am I the maker of my destiny or life is predestined? This question is bubbling. Yeah. I found a very sweet answer from Mahabharata and Acharya's commentary. So one thing is that Mother Rukmini Devi, it's not exactly related to this, but I'll come back. Mother Rukmini Devi and Krishna's discussion when she fainted because she felt like Krishna may leave.
Yeah.
Of course, Krishna has done it. But after she came out of it, their discussion was very pleasing. In Vaishnava Toshani gives that one of the things Mother Rukmini Devi said to Krishna, yes, you do know past, present, future. Vedaham samatitani, vartamana nicha orjana, bhavishya nicha bhutani mantu vedana kashchan. Famous verse in Bhagavad Gita. But then she said, but you don't know how much devotee loves you.
Mm.
This is a very unique, because then otherwise there is no value of individuality.
Yes.
Yeah. So another point here, I think I love the Harishwari Prabhu's in his book mention about Prabhupada talking about power of free will.
Mm.
So in this case, Dhritarashtra is bound to mentally feel because previous life, another life, he killed 100.
You
know that story?
Yes,
I hope everybody knows
yes.
that story. So he has to go through this experience.
Yes.
And that's how devotee also goes through.
Yes.
But we always have a free will.
Yes.
Free will is above everything.
Yes.
And if we can always take shelter of Krishna to get out of whatever situation, that is not controlled.
Yes.
Or predestined.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you for sharing, Prabhu. Thank you. Yeah, a few perspectives on that and then we'll conclude. If we think that there's a few, we have to also understand the makeup of the setup, right, where we are asking the question of free will. That if the world is designed to teach us lessons, this material world is to teach us so that we can become purified. So that's one perspective, right, that there will always be lessons coming my way. The second perspective, the goal of human life is to raise my consciousness from the material platform to the spiritual. And Prabhupada even says that Vrindavan is a state of consciousness. Bhava Vrindavan, the acharyas talk about it. That we raise our consciousness. So the purpose of my life is to raise my consciousness. I'm operating in a world which is always teaching me lessons so that I can raise my consciousness. Within those two frameworks, I'm getting results from my karma. I'm getting results from the three modes of nature. I'm getting the kleshas, adi bhautik, adhyatmik, adi devik. Right? I'm going through birth, old age, disease, death. I'm going through the human context of cheating propensities and illusion. So if we think of the human context that is presented, the framework and the parameters of that framework that are presented, within that, I still have free will to choose the right thing. Because ultimately, if you think of, even in this verse, right, the choice is between, at every point, we our choice is either to surrender to Krishna or not. So I either choose Krishna and his personhood or I don't. That's the ultimate choice at every point in time. So as I keep making that choice, I'll keep going there. Now, within that framework, if lessons come and Krishna knows about the lessons, he would know the lessons that come, but he also gets surprised sometimes how that lessons come. And that's the point when the gambling match happened. He told Yudhishthir that Yudhishthir was praying quietly that Krishna, please appear, please appear, please appear. I don't want to gamble. And Krishna doesn't appear. But when Draupadi prayed, Krishna appeared right away. And then Krishna meets Yudhishthir later, said that had I been present, this wouldn't have happened. Now, how do we understand that? Krishna, you were there, you appeared for Draupadi. Because there is also individual lessons that each jiva is going through. That Draupadi's lesson was complete surrender, she understood it. Yudhishthir's lesson was to change his worldview, which he did not. He didn't want to criticize Dhritarashtra. Right before the battlefield, as the armies arrayed, Yudhishthir finally criticizes Dhritarashtra and says that the blind king brought this on himself. So we also see the uniqueness of individual lessons. Collectively, that's happening. So it's such a, if you think of AI, you know, today AI is generated. And with AI, there are all these parameters that are filled in that gives us a specific answer. So this material world is a cosmic manifestation of intelligence that Krishna has created that is giving us each, and we are coming to outcome. So it sometimes takes that perspective of understanding the parameters that are here at play to fully understand that, yeah, what does it mean to really have a future about it? Anyway, more to say. Thank you very much. I know we are over time. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Vancha kalpataru vyasya.